It was a visit with her family to Normandy's Juno Beach that sparked her curiosity. Ellen Besner walked the beaches of Bénissomer and visited the Canadian War Cemetery where Canadian soldiers are laid to rest. She found close to 20 Jewish graves. Since then, she discovered more than 17,000 Jews served in World War II. She's written about who they are in a book called Double Threat, Canadian Jews, the Military and World War II. And she's in Winnipeg to speak today at the 9th Annual Tarbut Festival of Jewish Culture, hosted by the Rady Centre. And she joins me now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ellen, what happened on that visit to Juno Beach in Normandy that compelled you to write this book?
Well, seeing the tombstone of one particular Jewish soldier who was buried there changed our lives. And I felt that he was reaching out to me from the grave 70 years after he was buried because of what was written under the Star of David on the tombstone. This epitaph said, "He died, so Jewry shall suffer no more." And I needed to know who this man was, this 25-year-old artillery bombardier. There's nothing there in the cemetery, no interactive, you know, screens that tell you who he was. So when I got home, I Googled, of course. And I found out not only did a George Meltz, who was named after him, live three blocks from me in Richmond Hill, but was also president of our synagogue. And my cousin Judy Gutman said to me, "Meltz, Meltz? Oh, my best friend is Isabel Meltz. That's another niece." This was a nephew. There were 10 kids. And I had to write about it. And when I started to write about it, everyone would come to me and say, "Well, what about my uncle? What about my brother?" And I discovered this huge untold historic story, a Canadian story. And also how my family served, and nobody had ever talked about this before. So that's how it started.
How many do you profile in this book?
I think there's too many to count. In fact, my editor told me that I had to cut half my book because it was way too long and I wanted to tell everyone's story. You can't tell all 17,000 in a 250-page book. But I told stories of the main, most famous people and not so famous, some of the heroic people and not so heroic. They went AWOL, they had girlfriends, they did some, you know, not good things that they got into trouble. But they also did an incredible Canadian patriotic duty to their country. And most of them, like the Jews of Winnipeg, were immigrants, first generation, at least second generation, who'd come over from Eastern Europe to escape pogroms and anti-Semitism in the 1880s, settled in this Canada, in this new country. And they served to show loyalty as well as to save their brethren who had not come back and immigrated. And so there's too many stories to tell, but I told the ones that were the most important.
Some of the people that you talked about in this book are from right here in Winnipeg. Can you tell us a few stories about those men?
Yes, there was a huge participation from Winnipeg. There were 17,000 Jews who lived in Winnipeg during the war, and 17,000 Canadian Jews served, but not all from Winnipeg. Some of the most important ones, of course, were people like David Steinberg's brother, the comedian's brother, Jaime Steinberg. Jaime was 17 and a half, and he wanted to go into the Air Force. And his father said, "No, you're too young." And so Jaime said, "Well, I'm going to drive you all so crazy by making so much noise in the house." And he would stomp up and down the stairs. "I'm going to bang the table," literally, to drive them crazy. Finally, the father signed and he got in young. And he was killed in Iceland when he was 19. Other people, such as Monty Hall, for example, that served. He was called Monty Halperin when he was living here, of course. That was his real name. And he was at the University of Manitoba going to school, and he wanted to go into medical school, but of course there were quotas. Jews couldn't be accepted freely into medical school at the time. So he was on campus one day, and there was a big sign at the Armored Corps office saying, "Wanted officers." So he went to apply, and the officer said, "We're not taking Jews." So he ended up going into the entertainment business in the reserves, which is kind of a good thing for his career in Hollywood later on.
Well, that attitude speaks to the climate of anti-Semitism in Canada at that time. What was happening in Winnipeg before, leading up to war?
Winnipeg knows this story well. There were supporters of fascism here. William Whitaker was a mini Führer who published a newspaper called Canadian Nationalist, virulent anti-Semitic material. In 1933, 1934, there were riots at Market Square in June of 34, where 500 Jewish people and brown shirts and also you know, anti-FA people were clashing, and there were 9 arrests. Finally, in 1934, a World War I Jewish war hero named Bill Tobias took Whitaker to court to stop the publication of this newspaper. He won. But there were places in Winnipeg where Tuxedo, for example, which is ironic because that's now where the Jewish community is, but they weren't allowing people to have property. You couldn't have a cottage at Victoria Beach or some of these other Sandy Hook. There were quotas, as I said, at universities. And some clubs wouldn't accept Jews. It was hard to get work. That's the kind of country that they lived in at the time. And yet, despite all the anti-Semitism here at home, and of course, we know what Prime Minister Justin Trudeau apologized for not allowing Jewish refugees to come to Canada that summer of 39, the MS St. Louis, right, last week. And the people of Winnipeg, the Jewish community, was desperately pleading to bring Jews over. They worked very, very hard in lobbying. And of course, the doors were closed. And yet, despite all this anti-Semitism, they enlisted the minute the war was declared was about a week before the Jewish New Year in September 1939. And Sam Sheps, who was a very prominent, came from a very prominent family here, was a young lawyer. He didn't wait for the Jewish holidays. He signed up September 12th and went over, and he was killed.
In your research, do you get a sense of why, despite all this anti-Semitism that they faced in this country, they were prepared to die for this country?
Well, a lot of them said it was their duty, fighting for king and country. A lot of them said, I need to make a living, because it was $1.30 a day that you would get. And in the Depression, that was helpful to the family. Some went for adventure, a few. Some went because they were called up. There was conscription, or their brothers were going peer pressure. But for that was for every soldier, not just Jewish. But for the Jews who served, it was their war. They were going to save the Jewish people from Hitler's final solution. Not at the beginning. They didn't know as much what was going on at the Holocaust until a couple of years into the war. But that was their main motivation. It was their war, if any war.
Do you have a sense of how much anti-Semitism they faced when they were serving within the army and the forces?
For sure. There were, even when you signed up at the armories or at the registration offices here in Manitoba, they would be writing comments on your interviews. And Harry Nisnik, for example, who was born here to immigrant family, he was going for an officer's job overseas. And everybody said he was great, fantastic, wonderful reviews. But one officer wrote this coded kind of language, which if you put it on today in like labor relations, you'd get fired. It would be a horrible scandal. And it said something about his accent and that he's not suitable for officers, which is crazy because he was born here. So how would he have an accent? But there was all kinds of things, promotions. People weren't promoted that they should have been. And also things like they would get kicked in the stomach and called a dirty Jew. Or someone would say, for example, Nathan Isaacs, who was born in Winnipeg and moved over to Toronto before he enlisted. He was in the Air Force, a navigator. And he said in one of his messes in England, the mess where the people were having drinks, the officer says, oh, when the war's over, why don't we bring Hitler back to Canada so we can clean out all the Jews? These are all these things that they had. And there were also fistfights, and there was worse in the Canadian ranks, never mind what happened on the battlefield should they be captured by the enemy, the Nazis, and that happened as well.
You have, I think, at least 9 members of your family who served. And I want to talk about a couple of them, including a female member of the family. Can you tell me about her?
Sure, sure. There were only 270 Canadian Jewish women who served. That's probably because it wasn't seen as a thing you should do. It wasn't done. Their reputations were actually at stake. They thought that they were loose. My auntie Daisy Lazarevich was one of the first women to be trained as a military police officer with weapons. She could do jujitsu. She could kick your butt. She was a little older than some of the younger women. And she was a corporal in Ottawa checking security at the train station. And she was even on the front page of the Ottawa Citizen. They were trained here, by the way, in Winnipeg. Yes, they were. And there's pictures of them, the first class of girl MPs, which is so like Me Too moment, what have you.
Right.
But so, and you know, unfortunately, most of the family used to roll their eyes when she would say, oh, I was in the war, because that's what happened. Nobody talked about it. And that's true for all my relatives. My father-in-law said he slept through the Blitz and played soccer, which is not obviously true. And, you know, we also heard about one of my uncles who said he used Yiddish to arrest a German because it was close to German language. So he would, and that was something that he always liked to tell people. But they didn't, they glossed over it. They didn't talk about the PTSD or shell shock. They just told the good stories, not the trauma stories.
Who is your book dedicated to?
Well, my kids and my husband, of course, but also Uncle Leo Gutman, who didn't talk to anybody about the war until he talked to me. And he was in the RCAF. They called him Jew Boy. They kicked him in the stomach. He wanted to fly, but he had glasses, so they made him do ground crew. But, you know, he was very modest. And when he came back from the war, he discarded his uniform. He discarded all his medals. And when they had remembrance days like we have today later on, he would never wear his uniform. And the rabbi would say to him, when all the veterans were sitting in the synagogue for the Veterans Day and he was the only one in a suit, Leo, why aren't you in a uniform? And he would say, because I'm in the Secret Service. But it wasn't for, it was a joke, but he said he saw so many boys with losing limbs, losing arms, losing eyes, that he was lucky. And he didn't want to remember the hard times anymore. It was too hard for him to think about this. And he didn't want recognition for what he'd done.
Why was this project so important to you, to share these stories of members of the Jewish community?
Well, because if you look at the Veterans Affairs website, there are web exhibitions about other racialized minorities who served, First Nations, Chinese Canadians, Black Canadians, and very few went, a couple hundred, because they were also terribly discriminated against during the war. And there were 17,000 Canadian Jews who served at double threat, because if they were caught, they were toast. And there's nothing on that website of Veterans Affairs to recognize the unique experience of Canadian Jews in World War II. And so it's become my mission to remember them and also to tell people wherever you are in the world and you want to go to a cemetery where you see a Star of David, put a pebble on the stone, visit the boy, say hello, tell them we haven't forgotten about them.
You're keeping their memory alive. Ellen, thank you so much for joining me
today. Thanks so much for having me.
Ellen Besner is the author of Double Threat, Canadian Jews, the Military and World War II. She's a journalist and professor at Centennial College Journalism School in Toronto. She will be speaking today at 2 p.m. at the 9th Annual Tarbut Festival of Jewish Culture hosted by the Rady Center. And she has given us a signed copy of her brand new book. And if you want to win that copy, email us weekend@cbc.ca.